Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 19th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Education, Decatur, Christmas Carol, Told with a Twist. Robertson students perform their version of Holiday Story. Robertson Charter School's version of A Christmas Carol is a bit different from the ones you've seen before. Ebenezer Scrooge is now Ebony Scrooge and is portrayed by a fifth-grade girl named Kamaya Scott in the school's Reader's Theater version of the classic tale, which she and her classmates will perform this week for their fellow students and for their parents. "I practiced a lot," Kamaya said, emphasizing a lot. "I have the most lines." The fifth-grade teacher, Tiffany Jelks, wrote a simplified script from the story and let the children choose their characters' first names, since some of the actors, like Kamaya, are girls playing formerly male characters. Scrooge's nephew, Fred, for another example, is now Frida and is played by Kimora Robinson, and Jacob Marley became LeBron Marley, portrayed by Keelan Campbell, who is also one of the narrators. Jelks came up with the idea of using the story as a reader's theater to help the students improve their vocabulary and reading aloud skills, and it captured the kids' imaginations. It was their idea to put on the performance. "They then decided that they wanted to use costumes and props," Jelks said. "They took this project and made it so much more than I anticipated," she said. "Some students act as stagehands, scurrying around to move tables and chairs between scenes, while others hold up signs indicating where the scene will take place. Scrooge's house, the Cratchit home, the cemetery where two painted tombstones say R.I.P. Scrooge and R.I.P. Tiny Tim for the Christmas yet to come portion of the story. Jalen Green, who plays Tiny Tim and also narrates, said he learned several new words and his confidence in reading grew during the project. The students watched Mickey's Christmas Carol to familiarize themselves with the story and the dramatic elements, too. And while they're calling it reader's theater, that usually means the actors have scripts in their hands and read from them. All of the students insisted on memorizing their lines. "I am naturally an animated and musically inclined person," their teacher said. "I modeled different ways of reading their lines. I had student volunteers show ways to put emotion and movement into what they were saying. We brought many different reading strategies to our practices. Overall, I have seen our confidence as readers increase because of this project." Our class set a goal of wanting to increase the students' reading fluency and comprehension skills, Jelks continued. Overall, the entire class average increased by 26 words per minute from first quarter to the end of this quarter. We went from having zero kids reading at grade level expected goal now having 10 at least or above the targeted goal. Every single student increased their scores, and this makes me so proud of them, she said. And the photo here on page A5 shows Tiffany Jelks, she's in the foreground and we see the back of her, the teacher, leads her fifth grade class in a song at the end of rehearsal for Reader's Theater production of A Christmas Carol at Robertson Charter School in Decatur on Thursday, December 18th. And the large front page photo shows a fifth grader, Kamaya Scott, performing as Ebony Scrooge in the graveyard scene during rehearsal for a Reader's Theater production of A Christmas Carol at Robertson Charter School in Decatur on Thursday, December 18th, 2025. And Kamaya is holding a microphone and speaking into it, with, or I guess her lines. And in the background, we see another student with just their back, and we see tombstones, R.I.P. Scrooge and R.I.P. Tiny Tim, written on them. And then in a smaller picture here shows fifth grader Keelan Campbell delivering a warning as the ghost of LeBron Marley during rehearsal for a Reader's Theater production of A Christmas Carol at Robertson Charter School in Decatur on Thursday, December 18th. And Keelan, a.k.a. LeBron Marley, is also holding a microphone. He's wearing a coat with a fur collar and saying his lines, and someone, one of the other classmates, is holding a big sign that says Scrooge's House. And there's another student in the background wearing a Santa hat. Also on the front page, courts, Decatur, judge denies killer's claim of bad counsel. Paul M. Folks maintains he did not kill Shamila Sanders, the 22-year-old Decatur woman whose violent death inspired her grieving father to launch a major campaign to improve the lives of young people in the inner city and shield them from violence. So far, however, the efforts of the 47-year-old Folks to overturn his murder conviction and 55-year sentence have not been successful. The latest setback came in Macon County Circuit Court December 9th, when presiding judge Thomas Griffith denied Folks' claims that his defense lawyers hadn't done enough to save him. The Decatur defendant had alleged ineffective assistance from his then-trial lawyer, Diane Curry, since elected Macon County State's attorney. But Griffith concluded the allegations are without merit. Folks have been convicted after a 4-day jury trial and sentenced on May 4th. Folks had been convicted after a 4-day jury trial and sentenced on May 4th, 2022, for the June 9th, 2020 death of Sanders. She had been shot in the head as she tried to flee from a large street gathering on East Garfield Avenue that suddenly turned violent, authorities have said. The May 4th sentencing was preceded by a legal move known as a Krankel hearing, in which Folks first made his allegations, rejected by Griffith, then Curry could have done a better job. Folks also made a motion before sentencing to represent himself. Griffith denied that, saying that he suspected the defendant was just playing for time to delay his sentencing. On June 1st, 2022, Folks made a new motion to reconsider the severity of his sentence, and that too was denied. Since then, however, the Illinois Appellate Court for the 5th District has become involved, and the December 9th hearing was held on its orders. Folks is now representing himself, and the appellate justices are considering his ineffective assistance claims. The justices instructed Griffith to go over certain areas of concern, ranging from absent witnesses to allegations of tainted police identification procedures. Folks was brought over from the Menard Correctional Center for the hearing, which got off to a rough start. Griffith said he had struggled to understand the precise points raised by the appeals justices so that he could form them into coherent questions. I have read this appellate opinion at least 3 times, probably more times, and to say it's confusing, I think, would be a vast understatement, Griffiths told the hearing, which included Curry and special prosecutor Kate Kurtz. So, okay, I will leave my comments on that, Griffith said. Question and answer, or Q&A. There then followed a question and answer session as the judge went over issues regarding witnesses and police photo lineup methods, which Folks had highlighted and the appellate court wanted explored more deeply. Regarding witnesses, concerns centered on several named key people who were absent from the trial that Folks said would have testified he was not the shooter and wasn't even armed on the night of the murder. Curry countered that she had done her best to find and speak to these people, including one witness who showed up during jury selection but then vanished, but they all proved elusive. Folks then named a Decatur Police Department detective he claimed deliberately steered witnesses into identifying the defendant as the shooter. Folks said that that detective, retired before the trial got underway, should have been called to testify and be cross-examined. He alleged such questioning would have shown the officer had committed misconduct in the identification process. Curry said, however, that she extensively questioned other detectives involved in the investigation and had done the best she could with the evidence and information she had to work with at the time. Griffith, summoning up his conclusions before finding there had been no ineffective assistance, said he couldn't see what having the retired detective present at the trial would have done for Folks' claims of misconduct. I certainly don't think that the detective would have been helpful. He is not going to take the witness stand and state that somehow he tainted the identification process, Griffith added. Folks said that he will make the transcript of the December 9th hearing part of his continuing efforts to appeal his sentence. Prison records show that if it doesn't succeed, he won't be due for parole until June 7th, 2075, 1 month after his 97th birthday. In the meantime, the work to improve the lives of others continues. Shemaila Sanders' father, Shemuel Sanders, has founded the Shemaila Outreach Center in the wake of his daughter's murder. This organization now teaches dozens of young people job skills and provides other assistance with the aim of steering them away from crime and gun violence. Shemuel Sanders said that he wanted to save other families from the crushing grief his family has had to endure. And the photo here on page A2 shows Nick Mayberry, Community Missions Director at the First Christian Church, having a prayerful moment with Shemuel Sanders, leader of the Shemaila Outreach Center, after a dedication ceremony for a memorial for youth victims of gun violence in Decatur on Tuesday. Also in local news on page A2, man pleads to attempted murder. Ex-firefighter who tried to burn his girlfriend to death gets 20 years. This is from Maroa. A former volunteer fireman from Maroa who tried to kill his girlfriend by dousing her in gasoline and burning her to death in the bathtub has been sent to prison for 20 years. Matthew R. Broadhacker, 37, had been due to face trial January 12th, but changed his mind and took a plea deal that saw him admit the charge of attempted murder of the 44-year-old victim. Broadhacker was sentenced when he appeared in Macon County Circuit Court December 4th for what had been scheduled as a routine final pretrial hearing. The plea deal saw presiding Judge Thomas Griffith dismiss two other charges accusing the defendant of aggravated battery causing great bodily harm and aggravated domestic battery. The charges date to the night of September 28, 2024, when the Maroa Fire Department, alerted by a 911 call from Broadhacker, rushed to his home in the 400 block of North Maple Street. A sworn affidavit from the Illinois State Police said that the firefighters found Broadhacker's girlfriend with third-degree burns over 50% of her body. Broadhacker was also described as having suffered burns to his left arm and neck, and his beard was singed. Maroa Fire Department officers who were on the scene said they could smell a strong odor of gasoline coming from Broadhacker's person. The story of what happened had been expanded in earlier court hearings. Prosecutors said Broadhacker and his girlfriend had been arguing, and later she had stripped off her clothes to take a bath. Former Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Brian Shaw said the defendant had strode into the bathroom carrying a gas can and began soaking the victim in the room with gas. Shaw said the victim described how he asked if she wanted to die, and when the lighter he was holding failed to work, he left and quickly came back with a second lighter used for igniting barbecues. The victim had just had time to send her ex-boyfriend a text saying, "Matt just poured gas on me," before she was engulfed in flames. Defense attorney Evan Bruno had pointed out at those earlier hearings that the client had appeared to instantly regret what he had done. My client provided aid, called 911, and in fact helped provide medical treatment immediately afterwards, and even as first responders arrived at the scene. Bruno added, the victim later had to be intubated at Decatur Memorial Hospital to help her breathe, and she was transferred to more intense treatment at a specialized burns unit in Springfield Memorial Hospital. Speaking shortly after the attack, Shaw said that the victim would require extensive skin grafts to try and repair the damage to her body. Sentencing broad hacker Griffith ordered his custodial term to be served at 85%. He also ordered him to pay $250 to have his DNA added to the crime database maintained by the Illinois State Police. The court docket notes that Broadhacker requested to serve his sentence at the Lincoln Correctional Center, although it's not clear if he will get his wish. In state news on page A3, Education Illinois, leaner budget targeted. Illinois Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders cautioned members of the State Board of Education Wednesday not to get their hopes up for any big increase in K-12 school funding next year. With economic forecasts projecting little or no growth in state revenues over the next year and growing demands for increased spending in other areas of state government, Sanders said that the budget proposal he plans to bring to the board in January is likely to be modest. I just want to level set for the board that as we bring in our budget proposal asking for an increase in education funding, it's coming at a time there's a lot of other fiscal pressures on state government, Sanders said. So we're keeping that in mind in our preparation. Sanders' comments came after the board heard a briefing on the state's financial outlook for the year ahead, as well as summary of all the requests the agency had received for increased funding. For the current fiscal year, spending on elementary and secondary education is expected to total just under $11.2 billion, or about 20% of the state's entire $55.1 billion general revenue fund budget. Officials from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, the nonpartisan fiscal staff of the General Assembly, told the board that economists are expecting weak growth in the year ahead. They said that's due in part to economic disruptions brought on by President Donald Trump's tariff policy. They also said lower interest rates could result in reduced revenue for the state, and there is great uncertainty about how much money the state can expect to receive from the federal government due to changes in federal budget policies. So the bottom line overall is that without notable growth expected in the state's primary resources, with no significant one-time revenue streams on the horizon, a relatively stagnant revenue outlook probably should be anticipated this fiscal year. COGFA's revenue manager, Eric Noggle, said, so it's not the best news for the fiscal year 27. Education funding in Illinois. Under the evidence-based funding plan that lawmakers passed in 2017, K-12 education spending is supposed to increase by at least $350 million each year, with the new money targeted to the most underfunded school districts. That includes $300 million for direct educational expenses and $50 million for property tax relief grants in high-tax districts. But the K-12 education budget also includes funding for costs outside the EBF formula, known as mandated categorical expenses. Those include transportation costs, special education expenses, and funding for the state's free lunch and breakfast program. Due to budget limitations for the last several years, the state has funded only a prorated portion of those costs, leaving local school districts to pay the remainder out of their own revenues. For the current fiscal year, the state budgeted to spend $1.6 $17 billion for those mandated categorical expenses. But Andy Krupen, ISBE's Director of Funding and Disbursements, said preliminary estimates show it will take, an additional $151.5 million next year just to keep the state's prorated percentage of funding the same. Wednesday's briefings were just a preview of the official budget request that Sanders will present to the board at its next meeting, January 14th. That request will be submitted to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who will take it into consideration as he prepares an overall budget proposal that he will submit to the General Assembly in February. Now let's turn to Asking Eric. Boyfriend babysitting grandkids infringes on relationship. Dear Eric, my boyfriend and I have been together for more than 15 years. He has children and grandchildren. One child is divorced, single parent with two teenage kids and one younger. My boyfriend has to be there with them whenever the parent works, and after work, instead of going home, the parent decides to go out, knowing my boyfriend will be there. He and I have to schedule our time to go out around the parent's work schedule. I realize that he may have certain obligations, but he and I need a social life and should not have to depend on his child's schedule all the time. I never feel first. We're both retired and should be able to enjoy the last few years of life, not on someone else's schedule. I was a single mom years ago and managed my children and work social calendar on the support of my own, finding sitters, etc. Guess times have changed. Helping out is wonderful, but taking advantage is another. Any ideas? Sitter situation. Dear sitter, after 15 years together, I'd be surprised if this difference of opinion hasn't come up. But even so, it's useful to have a calm conversation about schedule. You might want to go in with some specific asks. I'd like to go out on Fridays. Can we make that a regular night on which you're not available to babysit? He may agree, he may not. Both are opportunities to continue the conversation by compromising and asking questions. The biggest question is whether he sees a social life as an important part of your relationship. If babysitting is something that he enjoys and doesn't want to change, then the conversation can shift to ways you both can get what your needs met. You want to feel first, which is a fine way to feel, but it may not feel that way the way you think it will. The needs of family are going to be different from the needs of a love relationship. The needs of children, teens, are going to be different from the needs of adults. It may not be fair to ask him to choose you over the grandchildren, but it is fair to tell him what you want to feel like in your relationship is a priority and talk through concrete actions that communicate prioritization to you. This also gives him a chance to talk about what his priorities are. Ideally, these conversations will help you to see each other more clearly and to know how to show each other love more effectively. Dear Eric, currently I am living with my significant other at his son's apartment. We pay rent and have our own room. His son is 36 years old, divorced with no kids. He's a pleasant guy and seems responsible. Last night, he let the daughter of a friend stay over, and she slept on a bed in his room. She's 12 or 13 years old. I am horrified. I don't believe that anything inappropriate is going on, but this is still inappropriate on so many levels. I am retired criminal defense attorney, and I also was an ADA in juvenile court. I have seen just how badly this can go. All she has to do is to get upset about something and make an accusation, and he is toast. He works in maintenance for the local school district. Job lost, not getting it back. Friendship done, not getting it back, and a question mark hanging over his head constantly. People will always have a little suspicion about him. My question is, do I talk to him? He's not my son, and he hasn't asked. I'm afraid I would just defend him, and he'd kick us out. But this is just not appropriate. And honestly, I'm surprised her parents are okay with this. What are your thoughts? Signed, in a quandary. Dear quandary, this raises a lot of concerns for me, too. For the child and the adult, it's perplexing at best, harmful at worst. Talk to him about it for two reasons. First, even though you're a guest in his home, you're still entitled to bring up things that make you uncomfortable. This is shared space, and his choices about this shared space alarmed you. At the very least, he can answer those questions so that everybody can peacefully coexist. The second reason is your professional experience. He may not be seeing what you're seeing, and even though he may not agree with your take, you're not accusing him of anything or telling him what to do. You're sharing an informed perspective. Even at its most innocent, this choice that your partner's son made indicates that there's a need for more communication in the home. Today in history, on this date in 1777, during the American Revolutionary War, General George Washington led his army of more than 12,000 soldiers to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, to camp for the winter. In 1907, 239 workers died in an explosion in the Dar coal mine near Van Meter, Pennsylvania. In 1960, fire broke out on the hangar deck of the nearly completed aircraft carrier USS Constellation at the New York Naval Shipyard, killing 50 civilian workers. In 1972, Apollo 17 splashed down in the Pacific, concluding the Apollo program of crewed lunar landings. In 1998, President Bill Clinton was impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives for perjury and obstruction of justice. He was subsequently acquitted by the Senate. In 2008, citing imminent danger to the national economy, President George W. Bush ordered a $17.4 billion emergency bailout of the U.S. auto industry. In 2011, North Korea announced the death 2 days earlier of leader Kim Jong-il. North Koreans marched by the thousands to mourn, while state media proclaimed his youngest son, Kim Jong-un, as the nation's new leader. In 2016, a truck rammed into a crowded Christmas market in central Berlin, killing 12 people. The suspected attacker was killed in a police shootout 4 days later. City of Decatur joins Recycle Coach app. For residents looking to reduce their household waste and become better recyclers, look no further than the Recycle Coach app, now available in the City of Decatur. Recycle Coach makes it easy for people to get local disposal information for thousands of household items when they need it is a free app that can be downloaded on a mobile app stores or can be used online at www.decaturil.gov/580/recycling. Again, that's www.decaturil.gov/580/recycling. With Recycle Coach, citizens can stay organized with custom curbside collections and recycling events, calendars, receive collection reminders and updates on service, become recycling experts with comprehensive What Goes Where search tool, including local disposal information and collection requirements for common and uncommon items. Take the We Want to Know weekly quizzes for useful recycling tips and tricks. So, again, learn more at www.decaturil.gov/580/recycling. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 19th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.